All right, everybody. Terrence Pop here with another episode of Live from the Lair. And today we're going to be going over the list of bullshit that was left behind by the American Army in Afghanistan.
Our current stunning and brave, duly elected, most popular president ever might have delivered the coup de grace to the Republic, but the first shots were fired by useful idiot vaginuts in sheep's clothing peddling lies and propaganda before our former Kenyan-in-chief made it legal. Take a stand against the tyranny and get yourself a copy of Surviving Fourth Wave Fleminism today. A link is in the description.
So, we just, Blake and I had the live stream last night. And he showed me the list, and I'm going to be honest, I reviewed the list, but I really didn't think about it any deeply or any more deeply than that. And mainly because the horror of the monumental failure that we are witnessing in our lifetime is to the point where you just don't want to believe it. You just don't want to fucking believe it. Now, this is an extensive list. And let's be honest. With the monumental F-up this bad, I can almost guarantee you there is other equipment that is not on this goddamn list that will be absolutely terrifying. And what that equipment might be, I don't know. I'm going to call it right now. Moving forward, I am making the prediction that we are going to see headlines and stories in the media in regards to what we have going on here. And we're going to get a lot of those stories like, oh, and we forgot this, and oh, we forgot that. All right, now, so let's go down this list. I'm going to go down this list, and I'm going to walk you through some of the stuff that is on this list, and we'll go through some pictures. Now, they say here 2,000 armored vehicles, including Humvees and MRAPs. We rotated armored units over there. And a lot of armored units, especially if they're going to be in a place deployed for a long time, they're going to leave a contingent of armored vehicles in country that units that are rotating in the country will fall in on that equipment, sign it out, it'll get issued, and then they use it for the year they're there, then they turn it back in when they leave. It's kind of like an NTC rotation. So we're just seeing Humvees and MRAPs, and I mean, those are bad enough, but I want to know if we actually left behind tanks and armored fighting vehicles and Bradleys, because that is serious shit right there. Those M1 Abrams tanks, if you can keep them running and you have ammo for them, you are in a position of dominance, especially if the people around you have like T-55s and T-64 old Soviet stuff. Because that M1 Abrams from the first Gulf War, I saw a lot of that footage, and that tank just cut through those Russian tanks like a knife through butter. In fact, it was a knife through warm butter. It wasn't even cold butter. There was basically no resistance. And when I was in Iraq, there was whole acres of tanks and armored fighting vehicles and so forth that the American Army had destroyed, mainly with Hellfire missiles, depleted uranium, and the armor-piercing shells that a lot of that our tanks were basically using. And it just wasn't pleasant. I mean, literally, I didn't get incredibly close to these vehicles. I got within 10 or 20 feet, and you could tell the tanks that were hit with those depleted uranium rounds, because more often than not, that round went completely through the tank. I mean, you can see entrance holes and exit holes through the turrets, which are supposed to be the thickest part of a tank. All right, the body, not so much. The sides, back, but the front usually has the thickest armor and the turret. And I saw 5 or 6 hits on, I believe they're T-72s. And you can see the hole, like 6 inches to the side of the gun barrel on the Russian tank. And in the back of the turret, you can see the exit. So, I mean, I have no idea how much armor that is off the top of my head, but I venture to say it's somewhere between 20 and 40 inches if you combined everything. Right through it. That is, I dread a piece of equipment like that dropping into the hands, you know, of the Taliban, because, you know, they seem like such nice guys and they only want the best for their country and they don't want to dominate it or anything like that. It's, you know, what are you going to do? All right, let's see if we can find us a copy of an MRAP. Here it is. All right, here's some pictures of the MRAP. Now, I'm not a big fan of these. This vehicle here was basically an afterthought after we started going into Iraq and Afghanistan, and the massive amount of roadside bombs that were hitting the troops early on. Actually, they used them the entire time. It's not like it stopped. Now, this particular vehicle was designed, you know, if you had an IED go on off underneath it, the blast would go off to the sides and up and, you know, technically spare the people within the vehicle. That is the case for, I think it's up to, IEDs up to 30 pounds. You go over that, you're risking serious problems. And it was very common, especially when I was in Iraq in 03-04, for them to dig holes and do 200, 300, 400 pounds of explosives. And I don't care who you are. If you could be in a tank, what have you. You roll over something like that, you're more than likely going to die. And the sides of this vehicle, I believe they'll stop up to 30 cal ammunition. May or may not stop armor piercing. I'm not up to speed on that. But a 50 cal will chew through that real easy. So, and you know, if you're riding around putting troops in that, and you receive contact, this vehicle's really high up. The minute those doors open, people are jumping out. They are subject to getting whacked in a bad way here. So let's go back to the weapons list. I'm not going to show you the Humvees. We'll be here for like an hour if I do that. We all know what the Humvees look like. And if you want to know what an up-armored Humvee is, take a look at it. But my fear is, we left actual tanks and Bradleys behind. Okay, let's go down to this next one here. 75,000, let's just round it up, 76,000 vehicles. We got the Ford Rangers, the Ford F-350 pickup trucks, vans, cars. I know that from people I've spoken to and individuals I know who work in the system of being the guards for the embassy and so forth, these armored security vehicles are basically armored SUVs, and they'll stop basically 30 cal and below ammunition. Anything more than that's probably not going to work out. But it is what it is. Now, I've driven in some of those up-armored SUVs, and they're, I mean, they're the tits. They're nice. They have AC and all that shit. But, you know, they're not frontline fight vehicles for fighting. But Afghanistan has been divvied up into a whole bunch of warlords. And I can almost guarantee you now they're divvying all that stuff up now as we speak. We got the Black Hawk helicopter. Let me show you some of that. All right, now, when I first came in the service, we were using Huey helicopters. In my opinion, I liked the Huey because, you know, I crashed in one and it auto-rotated. I liked it. But when I first came in the early 90s, late 80s, we called the Black Hawk the Crash Hawk because they were always getting grounded. They were always crashing. There's a bunch of crazy wazoo shit that was going on with these back then. It took them about half a decade to iron it all out. Now these vehicles are as reliable as a Huey. I myself don't care to fly in helicopters. I did it because it was part of the job. And I especially did not like flying in Blackhawks because, let's face it, the newer aircraft have a greater tendency to turn into basically an inferno when they crash, and you more than likely will survive the crash, but not the resulting fire. Yeah. And not to mention, you can put gun platforms and missile pods, and you could turn a Black Hawk into one hell of a ground support vehicle if you didn't really have to worry about ground fire as much. 45 Black Hawk helicopters. When you start talking about the huge whiz-bang crazy stuff that we left behind, if they don't get the technicians and the equipment needed, that stuff is not going to last long. I mean, the Black Hawk airframes are pretty old now, and after so many flight hours, they have to be grounded, inspected, and you got to start swapping out parts that are going bad and so forth. I'm not seeing the helicopter piece being too bad, you know, if they get the support they need from other countries, it's going to be a problem. All right, now we're going to talk about these scout helicopters that are left behind. You're going to love this one. This helicopter, if you can see here, it's got all the whiz-bang crazy shit on it. This one over here has, rocket pods. And the unit that we have here in the United States that flies mainly these helicopters is Task Force 160, who flies for CAG and Special Operations, mostly for CAG. CAG is another word for Delta, which technically does exist. Yeah, right. Now, I've flown on these before. I don't know if it's the military version of the Loach. The ones that I dealt with, you know, they didn't have the pointed nose. It was more rounded. It looked like the chopper from Magnum PI. And there were no pods on it, and there was three of us on each side, and we would land on rooftops, unhook, and go about our business. I can't even imagine how deadly these things are now, because back in the day, with 1990s, early 2000 technology, they were a goddamn nightmare. And you can see in this one here, you know what that looks like to me? That looks like a 40mm automatic grenade launcher sitting on top of rockets. And this looks like another chain gun of some type. I don't know, but you know, the way this is designed, you literally land it, you pull some pins, these drop off, four or five guys, put another one on there, put the pins in. You top off on fuel and you're up and gone. And it's literally when you watch them refit and fuel up these helicopters when they come in, it's like watching Formula One. The ground crews are on it, man. In Panama, we had, I think, six of these that air landed and they rolled them right out of the back of the C-130. And had them up and running in 4 minutes. And literally when I got medevaced the next day, I got to see in the daylight three of these things land. and a crew run out and literally in like, I don't know, it was like four, maybe six minutes, they all three of them up and back in the fight. This stuff is scary shit right here. All right, now when we go down this list, some of the stuff that, you know, could help arm this helicopter is on that list. All right, and let's go here. All right, so we got the scout helicopter. All right, well, now we got the military drones here. Now, again, the military drones, you need to have people that can fly them, that know how to fly them, and can do the maintenance on this stuff. Now, that stuff is available, and now the Taliban have money because we left pallets of cash behind that they can afford to basically pay contractors to come out there and run their shit for them. Because I have a feeling that's exactly what's going to happen. All right, now this is some pictures of the drone they got here. I'm not familiar with this particular model of drone other than the fact that it's primarily used for reconnaissance, taking pictures, using thermal and night vision. It has all those packages on it. I don't know, it's got somewhere around... The model I saw was really old, and it had basically 30 to 50 mile range. Could be wrong, and that might be able to make it go further with satellite communications. I don't know what that would entail if they don't have it, what that range would be. It's probably significantly shorter. But, you know, this is basically the launcher. This one's on a mobile platform. Okay, and then this one here is still on a mobile platform, but it's you can't really take it off a hard top. And each one of these runs $84 million for this, I imagine, for the drone, the launcher, and the controlling equipment. Yeah, this is a huge, huge waste of cash we just left behind in Afghanistan. And you notice here on this list, they don't give you a number of how many left behind. They just say plural. All right, here we go. 30 military version Cessnas. Now, my inkling is this, when you get to the military version Cessna, is Afghanistan is basically one of the world leaders of heroin and so forth. You got to move that shit somehow. And our alphabet agencies have done that kind of shit in the past. And I'm betting they were doing it just up until recently. And after the turmoil, you know, calms down, they might even come back and continue with the bullshit they've been doing. Now, this is the basic Cessna. We all know what these look like, but there's different kinds here. I'm just going to go through these. A lot of times, they use these for air support and calling in artillery and so forth. These were used a lot during World War II in Vietnam. Not so much in Iraq. I didn't really see any of them. But apparently, they're flying all over the place in Afghanistan. All right, here we go. Now, here's the AC-208 Caravan Light Attack Aircraft. Okay. All right, see this one here has the Iraqi Air Force on the side. I jumped out of some stuff similar to this. We call it a trans haul back in the day. And, yeah. Basically, this is probably used in the same light as Alaskan bush pilots are able to fly into and land in places that typically aircraft can't get to. I don't know the actual takeoff and landing distance needed for this type of aircraft, but I did venture capital for a bush plane called a GOAT that could literally land inside a football stadium and then take off from within the football stadium as well. And, I mean, it was pretty cool. It is what it is. Let's go back to the list here. Okay. All right, now the C-130, everyone knows what this looks like. Here it is right here. All right, now, of all of the stuff on this list, this one here is top of the food chain for maintenance parts and equipment. These airframes, most of the ones that we have in active service are coming up on the end of their service life due to stress on the airframes. Now, typically when that happens, they get mothballed and they scrap them for parts. And they, you know, when it's all said and done, they're usually left with the bones, which are sold for scrap metal. What most people don't know is the C-130 is designed to take a hell of a lot of weight up into the air as fast as possible. All right, that is not conducive to a stable airframe or one that lasts a long time. Okay, there have been a lot of military tragedies in the past that revolved around these things crashing, and it usually revolved around either the anchor points for the engine onto the air wing or a problem with the airframe and too many stress fractures and so forth. And we left four of those behind. Now, here we go. Now, this Brazilian-made A-29... you know, super Tunco ground aircraft. All right, let's be honest here. This was, you know, we have models that we designed here in the United States that basically is for this purpose. I've read some articles and looked at some of the briefings that we used within the military in regards to this type of ground attack aircraft. When it comes to ground attack aircraft, there is nothing better than the A-10. I mean, that is the cutting edge ground attack aircraft. They built that thing around a 30mm chain gun that chews through armor, can carry an insane amount of ordnance. It has virtually everything is redundant. And some of the more important systems, I believe they're not only are they redundant, but they have like a super secret probation controls. So you can fly that thing home and you shoot big ass holes in it, which happened all the time in first and second Gulf War. And I don't recall how many of these were actually shot down, but it wasn't many. All right. Now I'm going to show you what these things look like. Okay. And here we go then. A-29. All right, now, I mean, when you look at this one here, I mean, just look at that. It's got a turboprop on it. Let's see if we can find one that actually has some pods and shit. Hang on. Here we go. Here's one here. And we got a view inside the cockpit over here. Let's see if we can move that over there. I mean, look at that. Jesus Christ. All right, now, when I looked at the specs for this aircraft, okay, we had a fighter in World War II, the Thunderbolt, that could carry a little bit more than this. But this is a very, very whittled down aircraft when it comes to weight. And they did that so it has a lot of fuel capacity to loiter, because that is very important for air support. Basically, we have operations going on in the ground. These dudes are just basically doing loops, loitering over the battle space. And you call them on the radio. You tell them what you want. You pop your smoke. And they fire missiles, drop bombs. I mean, whatever. I'm sure they have gun pods as well to do what they got to do. Wow, here's a picture of one right here. And look at that. There's HESCO barriers in the background. I wonder where they took that picture. Because it sure as hell wasn't in Iraq. Just saying. All right, let's do some more of the list here. All right, we covered that. Heavy equipment, bulldozers, backhoes, dump trucks, and what have you. Now, when this whole Afghanistan thing kicked off with Osama bin Laden and all the crazy shit that was going on in their country, they had built these crazy huge complexes in hills and mountains and ridgelines there in Afghanistan. And they had whole cities in there. It was very similar to what you saw underground in Vietnam. And I saw a lot of footage of a lot of these complexes that had vapor barrier bombs or fuel air mixtures. I'm trying to remember what exactly it was. But it exploded inside these complexes and caused this huge backdraft that just threw hundreds of bodies out of the opening for, you know, hundreds of yards. And all of those things were built with equipment like this that we left behind. So not only did we destroy all of their shit in the beginning, but we left them the equipment to build more, a bunch of money, and the ability to defend these complexes. All right, now here we go. At least 600,000 small arms. M16, M249, that's a squad assault weapon. It's a 5.56. They're phasing it out, but it's still incredibly dangerous. We have the M24 sniper system here. All right, now this usually comes in 308 and 300 Win Mag. The 308 is getting phased out. I'm pretty sure we probably left a lot of this behind for them. But my primary weapon when I was a sniper and a sniper section leader on active duty was an M24 using a 308. And inside of 800 meters, I can draw pictures on you with that weapon. If you left it outside, if you left it exposed, I could fucking shoot it. A foot, a hand, what have you. You know, 600-800 meters away, six-inch shot groups. I mean, you were hit. And all this really is look at this bull barrel on a Remington 700 action that's been tweaked a little bit to give it better trigger pull. You have an additional buttstock here that cranks out. And quite literally, this is the exact same design that the Army was using in 1990. The M21 was getting phased out, and they were bringing this in. And it's been a quarter of a century. It's literally unchanged, other than the fact that they upgraded it to a 300 Win Mag, which, by the way, crushes your shoulder. You fire like 10 or 15 rounds, and you're pretty much smoked for the day. And we left this behind. All right, now, in low-intensity conflicts, your ability to train and use snipers is incredibly deadly. Because basically, this weapon system, a civilian can get their hands on one of these, or something very similar, for like 2 G's or less. You can train yourself up on how to do this. You just require a range that gets you out to 500 yards or meters, maybe 8 if you can find it. That would be ideal. And then you read a couple books on how to camouflage, and then you practice a little bit. Boom. Like, one guy can literally screw up the plans for a battalion of guys if you find them in the right choke point. You know, you pick off a couple, you cause a lot of fear, everyone hunkers down, nothing gets done. And it costs you 2 G's and a dude, and you can literally wreak absolute havoc. And I'm not even putting the 50 cal sniper rifle in there, because I'm sure that's been left behind as well. You know, the Barrett, I fired that a few times. But yeah, here we go. 50 calibers, 1,400 2 or 3 grenade launchers. That is an effective range out to 400 meters. You know, look at this. The M134 minigun. 20mm Gatling guns and ammunition. Okay, remember I was talking about those helicopters? Well, there's the minigun and the Gatling gun. That can be, I can almost guarantee you, these are in gun pods that can be put on the bottom of those aircraft, those ground attack aircraft and helicopters. I can almost guarantee it. Whoo! Are we having fun yet? 600,000! Small arm platforms. That is enough small arms to field 10 cores of soldiers. 10 cores. That is way beyond an army. That's a lot of weapons. Now, I looked at a lot of their weapons. Most of the ones I saw, I didn't see every single one or pictures of every single one. But the pictures I saw were very heavy in M16A1s. Now, what does that tell you? A lot of those weapons are basically the beat-up stock that we quit using in the 70s, early 80s. And they probably are from the Vietnam era. Now, I'm not saying they aren't functional. I'm just saying they are older. And there's a greater chance that they aren't functioning well. Or I know they're not quite as accurate once you... I mean, a weapon's that old. If you don't put a new barrel on them, their accuracy goes to shit. Now, I do know there are M16A2s out there floating around. And those things can hit point targets or out to 500-600 meters, no problem. And could, you know, turn your life into a redneck nightmare at 800 if they just want to, you know, put suppressive fire on your location. Okay, they have howitzers here. They don't break them down by type and caliber. Probably mostly 105s. They probably have some 155s in there. But that, you know, the howitzer game, that's pretty much what I envision that they have. That's pretty much what the active army uses. Mortars plus thousands of rounds. All right, now... 60 millimeter mortars is basically a weapons platform that will fire a mortar with the same explosive force as a hand grenade, up to roughly 32 to 3600 meters. The 81 millimeter mortar with just the basic full cheese charge round will fire 55 to 6200 meters, depending upon if it's a newer design of the tube or not. Now, 162,000 pieces of encrypted military communications gear. All right, now, as a former retired, you know, spec ops guy, grunt, if you lost a piece of encrypted military communications gear, unless you were in direct contact with the enemy and that stuff was in a rucksack that you had to leave behind, it's either that or die. That's probably the only scenario you wouldn't get fucked up. All right, you are at a minimum gonna get a field grade Article 15. You're going to lose probably 2 stripes, 3 months' pay, a statement of charges, and you're going to get the whole candy gram. Now, just multiply that by 160,000. And the people who allowed this to happen are going to receive zero accountability just for this. I mean, this is such a huge kick in the dick. I mean, you got to get kicked in the dick so hard, it's got to shoot out your ass for losing this amount of encrypted military comms gear. All right. First of all, this shit is incredibly expensive. And once you lose it, you got to change all of the comsec within it to be, you know, so it's not basically... they don't break your codes and stuff, which I'm not a code guy, but if you're a code guy and you have the right equipment training and you got your hands on some enemy comms gear that was encrypted, it probably wouldn't take long before you could crack it and figure out how they're encrypting it so you can listen to future communications. 160,000 plus night vision goggles. They don't even know. They put a plus on there. Yeah, and then they got the newest technology night vision scopes and thermal scopes and thermal Now, the thermal monoscope is not a big deal. I think you can see 200, 300 yards with it. That's about it. But thermal scopes, especially on a sniper platform, are an absolute nightmare. Because thermal is a bitch. It is almost impossible to hide from. You can do it for short amounts of time, but if you're stuck in the open, they have thermal, and you're hiding, I can almost guarantee you it's just a matter of time before they walk up on you and they send you to, you know, the happy highway upstairs. That's just it. Thermal is an absolute bitch. All right, now, again, we talked about those ground attack aircraft and helicopters. We left 10,000 2.25-inch air-to-ground rockets. Now, I have seen these things in action, and they are absolutely devastating. And here is a picture of it right here. Now, this is just the rocket tube here. Here is all of the different types of warheads you can stick on this rocket. And look at that. It's coming out of a rocket pod. And it looks like it is a very familiar airframe that we looked at earlier. Yeah. Basically, this has the same explosive force as a 105 howitzer round. Maybe more, depending upon the different type of shell that's used. All right, now here's another one. This is off of an Apache. Okay, but look, they'll get the size of that rocket pod. And here, I don't think they have Kiowas. They might have some Kiowas that are on the list. As a betting man, I would bet that we left Kiowas behind as well. Because let's face it, that list that I'm going from, that's just a, you know, off-the-cuff initial count. I predicted in the beginning of this video, we are going to see way more of this, of shit left behind stories. It's going to go on for years. Now, you know, and I'm also like wondering if we left, you know, shoulder fired anti-aircraft missiles that, you know, we're probably going to wind up all over the Middle East, and maybe they'll come across the border of Mexico, and maybe they'll be used to shoot down civilian airliners and cause all kinds of havoc, because that's what they do. All right, we're almost done here. Reconnaissance equipment, ISR, that's pretty penny stuff right there. Laser aiming units, those aren't incredibly expensive anymore. They used to be. They're actually pretty, this piece of equipment is pretty blasé across the Western world. It's basically standard operating procedure. Now, if you see down here, explosive ordnance, C4 Semtex detonator, shape charges, thermite, incendiaries, and other armor-piercing charges. Now, we just had an incident where we had 13 Marines killed using C4 and Semtex. Which was left behind. So basically, you walk in, you see a bunch of C4, Semtex, and detonators, and you know, you have the timing fuse and det cord. You can put together your, you know, happy to see you bras in 20 minutes if you know what you're doing. Oh, and here we go, 2,500 bombs. I'm probably gonna guess anywhere from 250 to 1,000 pounds. The 1,000-pound bombs are a little bit too big for that airframe to carry, and you can't put them on helicopters. So, I am, as an intel guy, am probably going to fall back on, you know, 1,000 being the top end, and a whole bunch of 500 and down. Okay, administration, encrypted cell phones, laptops, all operational. Didn't we have a candidate who ran for the office of president in 2016 who, you know, destroyed all of their encrypted phones, smashed up all of the hard drives, and got off scot-free? So, if she could get away scot-free, then hell, what about the, there's no accountability, fuck it. Pallets with millions of dollars in U.S. currency. I have no idea why the hell we have that shit here. It just seems like wherever we go, we seem to be leaving pallets of money behind. If that doesn't scream of corruption, I have no idea what does. God damn it. Millions of rounds of ammunition, but not included 20 million rounds of 7.62, 9 million rounds of 50 cal. Large stockpile of plate carriers and body armor. U.S. military handheld emergency, whatchamacallit, detection equipment. That's nothing. I got stuck on a team in Iraq where I had to go out and scan eyeballs and fingers to get fingerprints to take people off of this database of biometrics that they were trying to collect back then. But it let me tell you, if you're in Afghanistan and you have a list of people that worked for the United States government or army or military or what have you, and you find their file of biometrics, there's literally nowhere in the country they can hide. You just scan fingerprints until you find the people you want. So I can almost guarantee you, as we speak, right now, as of September 1st, there are probably whole throngs of people trying to get the fuck out of the country because the Taliban is going to go crazy up in there. They're going to be killing all kinds of people. They're going to be taking all kinds of hostages. And rescuing said hostages or doing anything about it is going to be infinitely harder because now they have all this equipment. All right, so I know this is kind of boring, but I'm going to be honest. I wanted to just let you guys know the exact amount of bullshit that took place. I wanted you guys to see pictures of the equipment, to hear what the equipment can do, and how we left all of this shit behind. It's not like it's a secret that the Afghan army was going to collapse. We knew that from like year two. It is now year 20. I have no idea why they had... I cannot think of a scenario where this was just a good idea to leave all of this shit behind. I mean, I don't even think you can mistakenly leave this all this shit behind. It had to have been done on purpose. I mean, God damn it. Oh, all right. I've gone off enough. I guess I was still spun up from last night. Anyway, take it easy.